Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mod Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and it is always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. Before we get into the night's program, of course, it is Black August. And with that said, we're going to open the program up tonight with our brother as we strive to again free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all of our political prisoners.
Mutulu Shakur, presenter here. His name was Mutulu Shakur, Dr. Mutulu Shakur, a lifetime freedom fighter for black people for most of his life. Born in Baltimore, Maryland, as Gerald Wayne Root on August 8, 1950, his mother moved north when he was 7 years old, and he grew up in New York's Jamaica, Queens. In his 20s, he joined almost every black liberation movement he encountered. He was a member of the group RAM, for the Revolutionary Action Movement. He worked with Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, which sought the establishment of a free black nation in five southern states. He joined the Black Panther Party and later its military wing, the Black Liberation Army. His service to the black community wasn't just in revolutionary activism, but as a doctor of acupuncture, where he treated addicted drug users and AIDS patients. He helped found BANA, the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association of North America, and later the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture. In 1975, he married Afeni Shakur, the mother of a little boy named Tupac Amaru Shakur. A daughter, Sekia, was born to the couple. After almost 40 years in prison, charged with the 1981 armed robbery of a police truck and his alleged role in the liberation of BLA soldier, Mutulu was granted compassionate release in December 2022. After an aggressive form of cancer was detected. Dr. Mutulu Shakur returned to his ancestors on July 6, 2023. He is survived by his children, Mofim, Sekria, Khalid, Nzinga, Ayiza, and Kinwa Shakur. Dr. Mutulu Shakur lived through 72 winters. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Indeed, I say. As Mumia has opened us up for tonight, we are, of course, again commemorating Black August. And for those who do not know what Black August is, we're going to provide you with some of that information. But before we do, we want to kind of let you know what's going to be going on tonight, again, as we not only commemorate, but also examine how we need to embrace Black August in the context of doing some actual work. And of course, there are many who are, but certainly not enough. And so we want to make sure tonight that we provide you with information that, of course, is going to lend folks to actually doing some other things. Again, if you are already doing some things, that is wonderful, but certainly there are other things that now need to be done. I can say specifically in the situation of Mumia Abu-Jamal here in Philadelphia, I'm very familiar with that particular political prisoner and what has been going on with him, with the efforts to free him, and very soon there's going to be some other kinds of things that will be going on to really move that struggle forward. Again, Dr. Matula Shakur made transition a few days ago, and tomorrow there is a celebration of life. And so we will definitely be giving more information about that before it comes out. You will be able to do that if you like. At any rate, before we go any further, I again want to let you know what's going to be happening later on in our program. In fact, very shortly, we're going to be bringing in our sister, Keisha Forrester, of course, from none other than Thorough Black Talk. And again, you know, if you haven't tuned in to that program, you certainly need to. There are a lot of things going on all over the country and needless to say, parts of the world. And for those folks who are trying to stay abreast, trying to make sure that you are as in tune as possible, well, Thorough Black Talk is one of the programs that I strongly suggest that you, you know, keep abreast of, keep in tune with. Again, there's a few, but that's one of them that we strongly suggest. As time goes on, people will have to really begin to understand because the confusion has to become lessened, and it will become lessened as we, those of us who are really, I won't say more serious, I'm just going to say more real about, you know, the justice and liberation for our people. Those who are of that kilt, of that mindset, we are going to have to do something to help differentiate our position from others. And I'll go more into that shortly. You know, this has just been a wonderful time period, family, to begin to realize and recognize, again, what's really going on. And with that said, we are prepared now to take direct action. As such, some of what you will see me and WM do is for everybody. There will be some things that is, but there's some things that will be. And that is because, unfortunately, some are not ready. And, you know, we will do whatever we can to help get folks ready. But I dare say after 100 years, right about now, we really don't have a whole lot of time to be dragging along, and so we will move forward accordingly. At any rate, on the live line tonight, once again, we are going to talk with Sister Keisha, and she's going to share with us some information and insight into a meeting that she recently had with a Ku Klux Klan member. Wow, can you imagine that? Well, I couldn't, but don't Sister Keisha, I mean, you never know what that sister going to be doing. And it's all good. Believe me, it's all good. But I cannot wait to hear, you know, what she's going to share with us about that particular situation and experience. You know, and it's kind of interesting because just the other day I was reviewing and giving some thought to the Honorable Marcus Garvey. And, of course, remembering that the Honorable Marcus Garvey also met with the Klan. And if I remember correctly, so did the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So, again, you know, it follows suit in a way. And so I was really kind of glad to see it and hear about it because I knew it was of a certain type of meeting. But at any rate, we're going to talk with her very shortly. Also joining me a little later on, we're going to get a direct report update on the release of Baba, Brother Rochelle McGee. He is finally home, family. And so, you know, we are so very happy to hear this brother has been incarcerated. In fact, it is said that he is the longest person, or his incarceration has been the longest of all of the political prisoners in particular, 67 years. 67 years. And, you know, that's just, I mean, I can't even begin to think about that. So We're going to get a report, to learn more about his release. You know, he's home now. And, of course, what folks can do to help, to support. Of course, this has to be a very, very serious transition for him. And so, you know, folks need to do whatever they can to help him get, you know, acclimated and go through this process that he needs to go through. Okay, so we will talk very shortly with a representative from the coalition, Jeffrey Mushon. And so we're definitely looking forward to hearing that dialogue and that update. Again, I want to remind you, Dr. Mutula Shakur, tomorrow, Sunday, August the 6th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We were going to do our session for the sisters tomorrow. We're going to start doing classes and other kind of form for sisters who are interested in developing further the ideas, concepts, and other things connected to that as it pertains to African woman sisterhood and African woman development. And so we are going to begin doing classes. It'll start next Sunday as opposed to tomorrow. And again, I wanted to make sure that I was able to participate in tomorrow's homegoing services for Dr. Mutula Shakur. Okay, let me see what else I need to share with you before we get ready to go talk to Sister Keisha. Want to remind you again, of course, other political prisoners such as Iman Jamil Alameen and Reverend Joy Powell. These are, again, some of the other political prisoners that you're going to hear us talk more about here on New Day as we proceed in making certain that people are acclimated to doing more in reference to obtaining their freedom. Okay, so again, we'll give you more about that. And lastly, before we bring our sister in, the Million Women World March is coming up. It's a kickoff. It is a three-year program, and this year it kicks off in Washington, D.C. And so before we close out tonight, we're going to put out some information for those who are in the D.C. metro area. If you are interested in being a part of the coordinating committee, either as a volunteer, as advisor, what have you, we'll be putting that information out to you shortly. Again, we're getting ready to form the committees for that area as part of the hosting committees, and they will be dealing with some of the intricate things that need to be going on the ground level in D.C. and surrounding area. And so a little later on, I'll give you some information about that. We're looking for Black businesses in particular to get involved because they are going to be a major focus for us. And for now and for the future, because what we're building, it encompasses a variety of interactions. We've held out on not really conveying or putting up a lot of information about some of what we were doing, because our experiences have been that people, you know, see it, get it, and then figure out how they can usurp or do other things. So we are getting ready to do some serious exposing and also advancing. So with that, see it. Okay, I see Sister Keisha is in queue. And, I thought she was in queue. That must be somebody else. And so what we're going to do is, hold on 1 minute, let me just check something very quickly. All right, sorry, there we go. Okay, so family, listen, what we're going to do, Sister Keisha is going to be coming in a little later on, and again, we are going to do this very quickly. Okay, we're going to queue up real quick. There is another video that we wanted to share with you from Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Of course, we wanted to start off with that one because it was, in fact, talking about Dr. Mutula Shakur. But there is another one that we'd like to share with you. And if you give me a moment, I will cue it up for you. Okay, there we go. All right, this is Mumia again. This is one of his other last commentaries. And here we go. Oops, wait a
wars against Black history. And now we see, perhaps in the first time in modern days, states like Florida waging war against Black history by passing laws against what teachers can teach and, perhaps more importantly, what they cannot. In the land that brags about First Amendment laws of free speech, teachers are threatened to be silent about any Black history after 1875 or the time of Reconstruction. It's as if, for Black people, history stopped at Reconstruction, and nothing happened in their lives. To add more insult to injury, these same lawmakers have argued that slavery was maybe good for Black people. It is not enough to observe that legislators make damn poor historians, but it also reveals their titanic stupidity. For hidden history has a way of seeping through like a break in a dike until it unleashes a flood. For it reveals that which white supremacy fears most, the 20th century's history of Black resistance to white terrorism, that very force which overturned Reconstruction. Their solution? To lie to their own children, to outlaw history, is a grave thing indeed. Frantz Fanon, who lived his last days supporting the Algerian anti-colonial revolution, condemns the colonialists for assaulting Algerian history. In his classic work, The Wretched of the Earth, he wrote, "Colonialism is not satisfied with snaring the people in the net or of draining their colonized brain of any form or substance. With a kind of perverted logic, it turns its attention to the past of the colonized and distorts it, disfigures it, and destroys it. That colonial policy conducted against the colonized people of Algeria a half century ago is being employed against Black people in America today. We need freedom schools, liberation schools, as occurred during the 1960s, to teach the truth to children today. With love, Nasir. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal." These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
All right. Again, that was Mumia Abu-Jamal. And it's very interesting, again, that he is focusing on a topic that we have been talking about for quite some time here at New Day and with the Million Woman March. In fact, for those who do not know, the original Million Woman March had 10 platform issues, and one of them was, in fact, us having our own independent schools and educational facilities and capabilities. That was part of the agenda even then. And so it's been very, very interesting to observe how much support we could get for that kind of activity. We in Philadelphia, or in education arenas. Either they are teachers, or they have other kinds of degrees, or have you in education, or doing other things. And so it's been pretty much known here in this city that one of our objectives was, in fact, to educate our own children. But yet, when that information goes out, there is little response to it. Well, now we're not sending it out, really, and not even expecting it. We're going to do it ourselves, but we wanted to at least do what we felt was the right thing and the best thing, and that was to make every effort to engage with others who specifically had those kind of expertise. Now what we know is it doesn't work like that. If you are trying to do something independent, if you are trying to do something that is self-determined, if you are trying to do something that's not connected to the system, then from what I've seen and have experienced, you're not going to get the kind of support that you think you're going to get. And so we now can prove that point, and not only prove that point, but make sure that others are very clear about why in most cities there is no independent schools. Now, as Brother Mumia just said, we must have our own schools. These people with their revisionary history and all this other stuff, well, I mean, what would you expect? Do we really keep thinking that our enemy is going to help us do something that makes sense beyond a certain point, you know? And do we not keep knowing and understanding that they'll keep throwing these little trinkets in our faces, have us satisfied for a minute, and then when they're ready to pull it, snatch it back from you, then they do and will. So, again, with the Million Women World March, best believe, until we're able to get brick and mortar, we will definitely have educational services available to our people. And so you'll hear more about that very, very shortly as well. Okay, before we get with Sister Keisha, let me just see if there's anyone that has an announcement or if there is something that you want to share with us that you might be doing or participating in. We want to thank all of our people who have been supportive to us for us over these past years. Your support has been extremely appreciated. And again, you know, we are very clear now about who is who and what is what. Best believe. And again, for those who have been supportive, we again send you much love, much respect, and appreciation. Okay, I think I do see my sister in queue now, so let's do this, because I've been waiting for this conversation. My goodness, I just can't even begin to imagine. Okay, but let's get ready to do this, because, wow. Oh, before we do, I just want to remind you again, a little later on, we should be talking with a brother who is a member of the coalition in representation of Brother Rochelle McGee. So we're going to be getting an update from him very shortly so that we can, you know, see how we can support. All right. I do see Sister Keisha in queue. So let's do this. Let's open up her mic and let's get with the nitty gritty. All right. Hey, sis, how you be tonight?
Good, good. How are you and the family doing? Can everybody hear me clearly?
Yep, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay,
well,
I'm using
well.
Headphones, so I hope everybody's
okay.
Able to hear me.
Okay, yep, we can hear you. It's not as clear as it normally is, but we got you. We hear you.
Okay,
so,
I can switch the headphones if you need to.
Okay, no, we good. You good.
Okay.
So before we get into the dialogue, tell me, how did this happen?
Well, let me just say that, you know, I hadn't had any plans to, you know, go down there, you know, prior. As a matter of fact, it was my siblings who were going down to Nashville, and being that it was my Earth Day weekend, you know, they wanted me to come along. So the three of us, we planned this trip to go down there, but they know how I am. I want to go to the museums. There's certain things I want to see. So, you know, we were going along with that route. And so the area in which we stayed, it was really funny. Let me just say, downtown Nashville, Tennessee is, you can feel the energy that this ain't for black folks. Even though the economy of downtown Nashville relies heavily on black music. In fact, in the heart of downtown Nashville, is the African American Music Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far from there, maybe about a 15-minute drive, I would say. You have an area called 4th Avenue and I believe North Carolina, 4th Avenue and North Charlotte Avenue, to be exact. That was Nashville's slave market. Now, when you go to that area, there are two plaques, right? One commemorating or giving honor to the enslaved Africans who were there.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe about, I don't know, maybe a quarter of a mile. I'm just guessing. Maybe three blocks, three or four blocks. So that's, I think, a quarter of a mile. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But you have another plaque that highlights that this area was the home of the institutions that from enslavement.
Mm.
Right? So you kind of put all of this together. Here we are, downtown Nashville, the hub of, it's like, it's their Times Square, I would say. And then you have these two plaques, and then you have the African American Music Museum. Nashville is a music city. If you are into music, especially live music, Nashville is the place you want to be if you want to hear the blues, country music, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of the establishments are owned by the Yoruba, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said before, it gives you the feeling that this ain't for black folks, right? We were very much the minority in this space. Even though you saw sprinkles of black folks throughout, we were definitely the minority. Now, the economy of downtown Nashville relies heavily on black music, blues, country, and gospel.
Mm.
Again, it's not very welcoming, but it's in the very center of these two plaques that I just said. One,
mm-hmm,
highlighting the institutions that benefit from enslavement and give an honor to those who were enslaved in that area. And I have photographs of those things. We'll discuss it on Thorough Black Talk Thursday. But, so we're walking around the town, you know, trying to figure out what we want to eat or what have you. I noticed that although the establishments are owned by Yoruba, their security force are us. So immediately,
wow,
me with my little African tingling going on here, I threw on my CIA hat, if you will, our intelligence. And one of the things that I always say, we lack an intelligence bureau when it comes to black liberation. So
right,
me, myself, I have formed my own. Who's
right
in it? Where I get information from is nobody's business but those that I share with. So
right,
I'm having a conversation with my siblings about where we're going to eat and the type of foods we want to eat or what have you. And then we started to talk about the live music that was happening because we did have plans to attend a jazz and blues festival, which we did the following day. So we were talking about all of this, and, you know, my siblings are very much conscious and very much aware. So we started talking about the very same things. There is also a bridge that you have to go across. It's a walking bridge. You know, if you want to have certain foods, you go over here for Mexican food. If you want, you know, black-owned, you know, soul, you know, comfort foods or whatever, you go to this, go that way. Different directions on this bridge. So we're having conversations as we're walking and, you know, in our phones. And someone that I noticed looking at us. Now, again, we're walking across this bridge. And I'll show you images of the bridge on Thursday for you guys to see what I'm talking about. It's a very, you know, long bridge. But I can see or feel this person staring at us, I would say. So my siblings and I, we stopped to take photographs and, you know, just commemorating our experience. And I noticed this person and the person he was with getting closer to us. African tinglers is on. So, you know, being who we are, we still engaged in our conversation. It was very much highlighted on the institution of enslavement, race, where we were, where we were, how far we done pushed ourselves back in this fight. So this person now is getting closer, right? So I got to put on my hat because I want to see what they thinking. I can tell this person is engaged in the conversation that we are having. Mm. So again, as we started to take photographs, this person says, ooh, can I get in a picture? No, I don't know you. Right? He said, well, here in the South, this is what he said, here in the South, we are very friendly. So I said, well, I'm not from the South, but I respect it. And because I respect it, yeah, you could get in the picture. So we took several pictures, right?
Right.
This person says, now, I overheard what you all were saying. And you know you're 100% right. The problem is you're not going to do anything about it.
Whoa.
So, you know, this is my intelligence hat. This ain't the K-Fighter hat. This is my intelligence hat. So I says, well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But what is the conditioning that will prevent us from doing something about it? The mere fact that you all continue to participate in a political process that you will never win tells me that you're either insane or incompetent.
Ooh.
And he says, I don't mean it personally. I said, I'm not taking it personally. I want to hear more what he got to say, right? Go along so I can get the information I want. So let's have a seat. So we have a seat. And, you know, my siblings, they watching, like, my sister don't know, come on. No, I noticed the necklace he was wearing with the Confederate flag on it. So I said, that's very interesting what you're wearing. He said, are you a lawn buyer? I said, absolutely not. So he says, wow, that's very striking because, you know, most black people become a lawn buyer. I said, it doesn't faze me at all. Whatever you wear is totally up to you. He said, so what if I would wear a white power T-shirt? I said, I would love it. He said, you would love it? I said, yeah. That tells me exactly who you are. That it tells me exactly what you stand for. I might not like it, but I respect it.
Right.
I respect you for letting me know who you are. He said, really? He said, well, can I tell you of an organization I belong to? So I said, okay, sure. He says, I guess some people will refer it to as a clan. I said, wow. I said, interesting. How long have you been in it? And he said, pretty much my whole life. My father, my grandfather. I'm telling you, he had no qualms about it. Now, remember, I told you we in downtown Nashville. If anybody who's been downtown Nashville, you know this is like Mardi Gras for drunk white folks. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. It's something to behold. You got to see it. So, anyway, I said, you know, one thing I know for certain is that whatever it is that you feel, whatever it is that you believe, that you're willing to fight for the death for it. He says, in some aspects. So I said, well, explain what aspects you wouldn't fight for. He says, well, if I had to destroy my entire race while doing it, I would have to contemplate what we're doing. So I said, what are your thoughts on these, you know, people who are identified as Karens and Kings? So he burst out laughing. What is the truth? I'm telling y'all, bust out laughing. So then, after he composed himself, he said, I like how you know, you come up with these derogatory names for people who are confronting things, who are confronting what they feel are injustices. He said, as a matter of fact, what you should be more concerned about are the, he gave me the quotation fingers, the Karens you don't hear about. So I said, could you elaborate? He said, well, I think you can pretty much gather from what I'm saying. He said, you know, we respect people like Malcolm X. This is what he said. He said, we respect, you know, people like that because they were very direct. He said he was very direct. He was honest.
Right.
And he tried to get you all to see the importance of being direct and honest. He said, black people have hidden behind the federal government and the vote for too long. In doing so, he said, you all hindered yourselves. And that's why we can't respect you. You put everybody else ahead of you, and then you want us to eat that as well. We will not. We will not. He said, but I like you. I said, I like you. You are very, very intelligent. I said, oh, you think so? He said, yes. He said, I would invite you over to my house. He said, I've had black people at my home. But none of them were as inquisitive as you are about who I am. So I'm just saying to say all of this that, yeah, you got white folks maybe nice. It's your job as a freedom fighter to gather as much intelligence as you can from them so that you can benefit in your fight and your approach with them. But anyway, continuing with the conversation, he says, what are you guys doing down here? So my sibling says, we just taking a little vacation. He said, very nice. He said, So then my sibling said, you know, we noticed a lot of people, a lot of the drivers that we had, because we pretty much use, you know, car service while we're there, are ex-New Yorkers who moved down here. Now, mind you, we had several car service drivers. I don't want to mention the name of the car service because they ain't paying New Day Liberation. So
right.
They said we met some from Brooklyn, we met some from Howard Beach, we met some from Bensonhurst. Now, they said, because we asked them, you know, what made you want to move down here, what have you? Well, it's not as liberal as New York. Very honest. And drivers will ask us, you know, where you guys going? You know, are you coming, you know, down here for a while? And, you know, we just here for a couple of days, which we were. So getting back to the conversation, now keep all of this in mind. I told you, you have people, white folks moving from these liberal cities are moving down to southern states that are less tolerant of the BS. They're tired of it. And what they're doing is they're organizing themselves in many organizations, your doctors, your pharmacists, your grocery store owners, your street cleaners, your sanitation workers, your educators of your children. They are on one accord. We are not. He said, and I quote, excuse me, he said, even white liberals are on the same page. But you're not. He said, and this is some of the reasons why a lot of you are attacked. And very honest, are attacked unjustly. He said, because a lot of my people don't, this is not us black people. He's talking, this is him talking. A lot of his people are intolerant of us, black people, putting others ahead of us, meaning they are ahead of them. He says, what do you think about Donald Trump and this trial coming up? I said, I have no thoughts about it. He said, really? He said, I find that fascinating, because you should. I said, well, do tell. What should I know? Gaining more information from him. He says, and I quote, it's the only way. He said, whether you agree or disagree with his platform, it is the only marker. This is what he said. The only marker that would alarm black people enough to want to stand up and fight. The question is, will you do it on your own, or will you do it with the Democratic Party and continue to lose? He says, we will never respect you. Not in that way. This is what he said. He was very honest, smiling the whole time. I'm telling you. And the more acting I did, being inquisitive, the more he began to spill. This went on for about maybe 40 minutes, the entire conversation. And then, you know, we were going to part ways. And then he says, can I get you all a taxi or whatever? I said, no, we're good. He said, no, don't worry. Don't worry. You'll be safe as long as I'm around. So I said, really? He said, oh, yeah. So mind you, we go into the corner where we were supposed to meet our ride at. There was some police officers who was, you know, standing, patrolling the area, what have you. And he calls one of them over. He said, this is my good buddy right here. And he said, and the police looked at us with such disdain, I'm telling you, rage. And he told the guy, he pat him on the shoulder, he said, you make sure these young ladies stay safe while they're there. They're all right. Right? So then as the police officer now, getting towards the end, but as the police officer walks off, I asked him, you know, where can I get a good cowboy hat for? So he chuckled and he said, oh, you like cowboy hats? I said, no. So then he told me where I can get one from. And then he said, he said, this is something else we've taken from him, too. I said, I do know that. Then he says, are you going to visit the museum? I said, I plan to. He said, great. He said, you will enjoy it, and you will find it quite interesting. He said, and then when you leave, he said, that's where he told me where I can go to see the plaque at, the second plaque, you know, where the institution benefited from enslavement. And so I say all this to say, family, we got to be very concerned about our political apparatuses, our political prowess. And he said that. You guys have so much power, you don't even realize it. And it would benefit, this is what he said, and I quote, it would benefit you and us and get each other out of each other's hair. That's what he said. But you don't know it. And so it's frustrating. So we got to listen. I was like, wow. My sisters was like, dang, you are crazy. My sisters already think I'm crazy. But I don't care. I got what I needed. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, my God. Keisha, stay right there for one moment. I just want to let everyone know, if those of you who are listening online, you can literally go to the chat room now. The chat room is open for you. Aha, surprise, surprise. So you can just go there and put your postings if you like. Wow, this is more than interesting. Whew. So I don't even know where to go with this. I don't. I mean, this is just so, it's not only so interesting, but it's very revealing, to say the least.
Indeed.
Wow.
And you know, I'm very aware of my surroundings, where I'm going, where I'm at. And so I took certain photographs, just in case something pop off. Took some photographs, and I sent some to some people. You know, I spoke with you. I spoke with a couple of others, because this won't be the last type of trip that I make. Now, on Thursday, I'm going to be able to show some of these images. You're going to be fascinated. In particular, what I found in the museum. But, you know, they had these little cottage homes in these small pockets, right? When you see the illustrations of these fences that are around the homes, letting you know that this is a music city, number one, and number two, that they profit off of it, right? Just about every restaurant I would go into, whether it was black owned or not, that energy was there. You can tell from every establishment that you go in and out of, including the airport, of which I'm going to show you images on Thursday, that it is a music city and they profit from it. They profit, still profiting today off of what we created. Going into that museum, seeing the djembe drums hanging up on the wall and those piccolos that are hanging up on the walls. Oh, yeah. I got photographs of all that. To see, you know, this hub of black intelligence. You know, music is intelligence. This is why it's used to keep us in the conditions that we're in. And this is why you have to change the vibrations of the music that you listen to, right?
That's right.
We have these consoles. Within the museum, for example, you would have Barry White, right? But who were his influence? Who did he influence? Can you connect the dots of the cadences of generations of music? It's very profound. All of our heartbeat, which is music, is in the institution of white folks that are still profiting from our enslavement, because we still enslaved. Still.
That's right.
So they're still making, and this is what he was trying to get us to understand. I got what he was saying. I just wanted him to feed me more information. This is what intelligence is. And we have to have these if we're going to move forward in liberation, because it is intelligence that will help us avoid the pitfalls of the past. If we had proper intelligence, UNIA wouldn't have suffered its final fate. If we had proper intelligence, Malcolm wouldn't have suffered his final fate. If we had proper intelligence, Queen Mother Moore wouldn't have suffered her final fate. So I'm just saying we have all of these great institutions have dissolved to nothing because we lack intelligence. And we have to be, and I say this often, anybody who listens to me, they know I often say this. We have to be comfortable with being in uncomfortable spaces so that we can get info and intel that we need and a proper understanding of what's going on. You got black people who live all throughout Tennessee, down to TSU, to Black section of Nashville. There was a jazz and blues festival there. We was there mingling with the people there, with well-known celebrities. Tune in to Thorough Black Talk Thursday so you can find out and see more. But I'm just saying, my siblings understand what I was doing. I'll wear certain articles of clothing that will highlight my existence, that automatically draws people to me. You can ask my husband. You can ask my siblings. I got videos all over the damn internet, people taking of me. So I have to use intelligence. I have to. And to know that this museum is in the center of this hub that makes millions and millions of dollars for your Google. This museum that holds the very first recordings of our music on this soil during our enslavement. From the first 20 enslaved captives that were brought to Virginia, the music they used to fight against their oppressors, it's in that museum. And you can hear it. And they have been using it in various artists' music that we know today, but we haven't picked up on it because we don't know the legacy. We don't know the history. They had the first recordings from 1600. Yes, I have copies of those. Tune in to Thorough Black Talk Thursday if you can hear it. I'm not making this up. So that means that they had that technology way back when.
Wow.
We're just abreast of it now.
Right.
How did they get it? How did they get it? This is their documentation from the museum, from 1600 to current day. This is what this museum covers. In fact, last week, I followed 50 Cent, you know, the artist and business people. I follow him on Instagram.
Right.
He was there. He said, y'all got to come here. If you go to 50 Cent Instagram page, you'll see him talking about that museum and why you need to go there. It blew his mind.
Wow.
What's there? And how they connect the dots with various artists is profound. I have to get back down there because there's so much to see. It's very hard to get it done in one day. And plus, I think I was getting on siblings' nerves, so I had to get up out of here. But I do have a lot of documentation. Again, you know, when you go to museums, you know, it's of history and of things that are gone or things they plan to get rid of. And we got to take back our culture. And it's our culture that's going to save us. Because it bleeds our souls, kills the DNA. It kills that electric vibration that we have to our original mother. Shout out to MWM. Our original mother. It cuts off that electric vibration. And when you put those headphones on your ears in that place and you hear the original recordings of what we call Afrobeats today back in the 1600s, it's profound. It changes your very cadence on how you listen to music. So when I was saying prior, you know, I tap back into listening to country music. I tap back into listening to, we got to go backwards. And I'm telling you, today, and I know people laugh at me, say, I can't rock with that stuff. Because that electric vibration is disconnected. And when you go back and listen to what they have from the 1600s, it is some of the most race-conscious music you ever want to hear in this time. In this time, they're talking about warring against Urugu. In this time, they're talking about standing up for self and doing for self. It's this time that they're talking about connecting back to your ancestral realm. And it is these artists who are melanated that no one talks about. no one talks about. And they operate in these very spaces. They operate in these very spaces. And when you hear their interviews and when you see their journey, it's profound. It is profound what they have to go through. What these artists out here talking today, you ain't going through jack until you in those spaces. I'm telling you, Philly. So, you know, I hope y'all tune in Thursday. You can see a little bit more. I think it's going to probably be a two-part thing because it's just that much information that I have. And I try to take as many photographs as I can.
Now, I was just going to say, tell them again how they can tune in, how they can actually watch, listen in, and all of that.
Well, we are live every Thursday evening, 8 to 10 p.m. Standard Time on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitch, and soon we'll be on Threads as well. So any one of those streaming apparatuses, you can listen or view Thorough Black Talk. You don't want to miss it. Let me just tell y'all that. I'm not trying to toot our own horn, but we come from very different angles to cover the gamut of what's happening. Brother Tad deals with the psychology of our people as we know it today, how you have to deal with our people on these streets today. Brother Ashe takes that apparatus when it comes to the eccentric, on what you're seeing today. Recently you had Senate, or congressional hearings, I should say, on alien life, on blue beam, on cryptocurrency, on the Biden family and their shenanigans. Brother Black laid that out for everyone a year ago. Marcia deals with the communal aspect of things. So we cover different aspects of what is affecting our people today. Can I operate, and I say this often, the same way we did in 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, 2019, you cannot operate that way anymore.
That's right.
I don't know if you all saw what was happening in Los Angeles and New York this past Friday. You had almost riots, near riots, that young people were on the front line. You had one guy, Ty Sinek, whoever his name is, young dude, said he was going to give out 300 PlayStations and games in Union Square, New York City. He said he was going to give out about 300. 10,000 people showed up, young people. And there was a bust in the middle of Union Square of a black woman in braids. And she looks saddened.
Mm.
In Union Square, there is another bust of a black man in chains. So I'm telling you, when I saw those young people, see, people look at things on the surface. You saw young black people go at it with police, and they couldn't control the situation. They were off guard, taken by surprise. They didn't know these young people was going to show up. There were no permits or anything like that. Nah. He said, I'm going to be in Union Square. I'm giving out such and such. Be there. But because it was so chaotic, you saw gang affiliations fighting each other, fighting the police, whooping the police tail, whooping their tail, took over the area. Same thing happened in L.A. What are our ancestors doing? Who are they calling? Why do they call them to these areas? And how come we are not in tune with that? If a young man consuming 10,000 in less than 60 seconds, what are we doing wrong?
Right, yeah, that's
right. What are
we
doing wrong? We have to operate differently. This is what intelligence is. Now imagine if we could, at the snap of a finger, summon 20,000 young people to ascend on a police department or ascend on a white supremacist organization or ascend on a political apparatus that have been doing us dirty since we've been given the right to vote. You got to do things differently. And so I've been saying this for a while. I operate in intelligence. I know how to get things that I need to get and when I need to get it, and I'm learning from these young people. I'll learn from them. Real talk. There was another young brother, Arcadian, and I'm going to show his page on Thursday. Brother got millions of followers, but he's educating. He talks about Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, being a freedom fighter, rebellions. Now, as he gathers his hundreds of thousands of followers, at a snap of a finger, he will be able to summon them. It's all about what you know, how you know, and who you connect yourself to. And we cannot leave our young people out there, because those folks don't leave their young people out there. They go to the high schools and the junior high schools. Dylan Roof was a high schooler. You understand? When he was first approached. The dude in Buffalo, New York was a student when he was approached. When you look at all of these Aryan cats, these are young cats out here. Not old people holding a fight with walkers. They understand how to pass the philosophy down. And in our organization, Dr. Filet, unfortunately, we fell into dictatorship. We adapted the same philosophy as our oppressors, and we failed because we're not supposed to fight that way. That's their war, Matt. That's their war cry. That's not ours. We're supposed to use that intelligence for our benefit, not the LGBTQ, not these white Latinos who identify as Latinx or whatever the hell they call themselves. Not for these Asian folks, because they're fighting their fight for themselves. We got to stop being the footstool of Satan. So, you know, everything I do, my next trip, I'm going to Mississippi. It's about intelligence. It's about intelligence. So, because there are things there I want to see, right?
Yeah.
There are things there that I have to get to. Because we have to connect these dots with our people. We have to connect these dots. Where you're walking, who you're with, what you're wearing. It's all being watched. And now that our neighborhoods, because we ain't got no damn communities, our neighborhoods are now gentrified. And so the enemy has encroached. They right there next door to you now.
Hey, they done made themselves at home.
A white dude. Yeah, they just have found a white dude who they found the bodies of 40 people. This dude been selling organs.
Yeah.
Out of basement. So
I saw
we got a lot to pay attention to.
Wow. Sister Keisha, before you go, I'm going to ask family, if you have a question or a comment for Sister Keisha, you can press one now. I just wanted to add on to what you were saying, Sister Keisha. My last trip to Mississippi, I tell you, it was memorable. It wasn't as pleasant as yours, unfortunately, because I forgot where I was for a minute, and I got into a cab by myself. And so, that did not just wasn't on top of my game at that moment. And it didn't take me long to realize that that was not the thing to do, but I was on a mission and just wasn't thinking. But once I got in the cab, I realized that was an interesting situation, because the cab driver was like, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm taking care of some business. Oh, yeah, what kind of business? And that's when my antenna started going up. I said, you know, I'm like, wait a minute, hold it. Whoa. And then it got deeper. And then he got into, how long are you going to be here? And that's when I really, you know, started paying attention at that point. Right. But I do plan to go to Tennessee. In fact, we have a sister in Memphis, but I'm planning to go visit the Cali House Center. That was my destiny, but I'm glad you mentioned, because I really, you know, didn't even think about the music museum, so I'm glad you mentioned that. But I'm definitely planning to go to the Cali House Center to, do some things there. But... Mm-hmm. Wow, it's
and, you know,
interesting.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just interesting because I mean I get what you're saying, and I just wanted to do this little sidebar that it's always important that we include our youth and young adults, because traditionally and historically, particularly as it pertains to struggle, that's what happens when we talk about. For example, Mumia Abu-Jamal, he was 14 years old when he started as a journalist. When we talk about H. Rat Brown, now Iman Jamil Alameen, or Stokely Carmichael, when we talk about Kwame Ture, all of them started as youth, young adults, you see.
Facts.
And so, you know, there's a history, you know, and even for me getting involved in struggle, it was because I thought that the student, because I, you know, I heard about the students and how they would take over a building and I thought that was still going on. So I went to college thinking I was going to get involved, you know, but it was gone by then, unfortunately. But my point is the students were the ones, even in terms of the civil rights movement, it was the students that would sit at those lunch counters, et cetera. So we know that's a definite connection. And lastly, when you looked at the Black Panther Party, the majority of the Black Panther Party was teenagers and young adults. So, you know, the knows that this is why, again, the issue of crack cocaine, this is why, again, while it was devastating for all of our people, the impact it had on the women was, I dare say, was to a greater extent, because for the first time in recorded history, some of our women literally sold their children. So this system knew what to do to make sure that the children. And now with this COVID thing, people don't realize that vaccination stuff that they took, that, you know, the capability to manipulate the genes now, as you said, the technology that folks have is much more advanced than what people realize. And again, some of it is specifically designed to alter the development of the children, you know, so. This is going to be interesting, but go ahead, sis, you're ready to say something.
You know, as, like I said, it's very important, you know, as Baba Del Jones laid out for us in Culture Bandits.
Yes.
That is our power, and it is the number one export in the world, black culture.
That's
it
right.
It feeds everyone. To the point where it really sucks the life out of us the more they feed off of it. And that's what's happening. You just had, when we were there, there were various rooms, right? They have one room, it's called Wade in the Water. And it's about the infusion of gospel music, where it comes from, how the Euro infused itself to bring Christianity to life. Oh, yeah, they tell it all. And as you go through the various rooms, different exhibits, it's very moving. as you go through it. Now, as we got to today's music, you know, I told one of my siblings, I said, oh, boy, I need to send you in there for this one. My spirit ain't ready for that one. But we went in there together, and I got through it. But it just shows you from the beginning where the sound was about freedom to the sound now is completely death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very profound. And again, when you go there, well, I know that you are technologically advanced, but you have to be in order to take home with you the music libraries that they have. And if you, I'm telling you, it'll take more than one day to download all of the music that they have there. They give you these bracelets. Well, they don't give it to you. You have to pay for them. Oh, about $5 for the bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to scan the exhibit, and it downloads to that bracelet. You give them your email, and they send you that music catalog that you download. So if you don't know how to use the bracelet, then you ain't going to be able to take any music home with you. This is, so, you know, I'm just saying that to say for those who may think about going, cousin and, you know, her daughter loves museums, so she's going to take her down there, you know, for a trip. But, yeah, you got to know how to use the bracelet in order to download any music. Now, you could take videos, you could take photographs. I try to take as much as I can in the amount of time that I had. There was also a black family reunion that was down there, and they were there, you know, visiting the museum. But I noticed how a lot of them were more about the congregation of them being together than the actual information that was there. But you can tell when those Yorubas moving through that museum, they are very intuitive to the history and the culture, because, you know, it's a life force for them. And,
right,
you know, we've
that's
been
right.
feeding them forever, and we have to stop
that's
feeding
right.
them our culture. And if y'all don't got to listen to me, just read Culture Bandits. You know, you don't got to listen to me. You have to stop feeding the machine. And our culture
right.
is what will bind us together. Our culture will give us the freedom that we want. Our culture will keep the enemy at bay. Our culture will make us successful in war. Our culture is the number one export. Our culture is the number one money maker around the world. And we have to gain all of that back. In order to do that, you have to understand the history. You have to understand where you come from, where we are, as Dr. Clark said, and where we must go. So, you know,
wow.
you can all get down there just to see that museum and those plaques in the quarters where our people were traded. Nashville slave market was huge, and that history is revealed to you right there out in the open. They have no qualms about it. And the sad part is we're still feeding it even though they tell us it. So that's my take on it. And tune in to Sound Black Talk. Anybody got any questions or whatever?
We'll
take it.
Yep. I could
be up out of here.
All right. Well, stay right there, Sister Keisha. We do have a couple of folk. And again, family, you can hear more and see more on Thursday, 8 o'clock, Thurl Black Talk. Okay. And remember, just like with New Day, once it's aired, you can always see it again. But try to catch it live so that you can interact in the chat so that, you know, you can also get involved. But listen, we got a couple of folks. We're going to go to caller. You are at 9498. Your mic is now open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Okay, can you hear me, Sister Filet?
Hey, Brother Ray Ray.
Okay. Hello, Philadelphia family. Sister Keisha, I got the history hitman, and I got brother Far. We coming from.
What's up?
How you doing, Keisha? We coming from D.C., hanging out with Darren. Coming from Baltimore.
All was
right.
Darren and the genie.
Darren Muhammad
and the genie, and we had some people from Philly down there. So it was a good show. So Sister Keisha and the Feral Black Dog crew is doing an excellent job. The hottest show on the East Coast. Hassan had a good time, so we have some people there from your part of town, Sister Filet. Everything is good. Thank you, Keisha, for bringing that update on the museum.
All right. Thank you, Brother.
We're on the highway now, 95, heading up north.
All right. Hey, Big Mike.
Hey. Look, we had a good time. It was talking about war, you know, war on the horizon with the irritated genie. He laid out some stuff that, some instructions that we all need to, you know, follow. A whole lot of things around psychological warfare and physical warfare, and the tools that are utilized to enslave us. And when he started talking about Africa, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, how they just, these strong brothers just seize power and promise that any strikes against any of them is a strike against all of them. It sounds like they're trying to unify Africa. So this is a start. And all of them were colonized by the French. So the French is definitely going to seek out a way to regain power in those three places, because there's so many parts of West Africa and the interior of Africa that France colonized. And one thing about when the French colonize you, they sodomize you. They sodomize the men. They sodomize the little boys. Consequently, you can possibly not be the man you're supposed to be, and you grow up with after being sodomized. It will take from your manhood in certain situations. So this is why Haiti is such a great example of resistance. If you look at 1791 on, what they were able to do. So what you see now is a reoccurrence of that spirit, of that power, and you'll see that these three young African nations are ready for it. They're built for this time, and if they don't assassinate those brothers' leadership is really through the roof.
And what's making it so good, one of the guys look like Dale Jones, the other guy look like Khaled, and the other warrior look like Steve Coakley.
Oh, my gosh.
They're just like him.
And Genie juxtaposed him. I mean, his brother looked just like Dr. Collins.
Looked just like Dale Jones.
Wow.
So it was good, man. And I wanted an update on those nations, and I didn't know Genie was going to present it. And so if you hear any things about France, or France trying to make a move claiming that they're terrorists, or they try to bring NATO into the picture, that's an attack on all of Africa, because these are the beginnings of a United States of Africa, which the great Kwame Nkrumah, the great Asajifu Kwame Nkrumah, what dreamed of. This is what Lumumba dreamed of, and now these brothers with that spirit are bringing that into existence. So tell them in the north, east, southwest, wherever you might be, let everybody know that this might be the beginning of something incredible in our midst. And anything we could do on this side of the globe to help them, we should. Because this is a very important moment.
Well, we definitely got to get you and put you and Brother Ray Ray back on so that we can talk specifically about that. And so let's schedule that in the very near future so that we can go more in depth.
Right.
All
That's
right.
good. And, you know, it's always good to hear Sister Keisha. They're doing good things. And I saw Keisha at the last, the last Mackie program where I did a two-piece, a part one and a part two on The Great Attorney of War, Alton Maddox. We need this information because nobody knew what was going on with Alton. So I would suggest that those who are listening, you get a chance, listen to part one and, more importantly, part two on Alton's life and those who was wondering what was going on. And I want to commend Sister Pam Africa so much because she knew that there was something going on. And she didn't want to be intrusive. So she said, Brother Michael, I know there's something going on, but whatever it is, whenever the time is right, I do want to talk to Alton, and I want you to facilitate that. And I said, you got that, sis, and left it at that. And so it was nothing but love for Sister Pam because there were certain people that spoke at that funeral that had no business speaking, but certainly Sister Pam and Raza Khan was not one of them.
So let's do this, Brother Mike. Let's do this. Let's get you back on so that we can talk specifically about that because I got some people that want to talk further with Sister Keisha, and I want to make sure I don't lose them. But definitely let's talk, get you back on, and we'll focus specifically on that particular topic because there's some things I need to also talk about in terms of Sister Pam, particularly right now.
Okay.
Okay. All right, my brother. Get that.
Yes. All right, now.
Okay, Sister Keisha. See you later, Sister Filet, and the wonderful people of Philadelphia.
All right. You know we got folks from Philly on here. Because I'm kind of done with some Philly folk here. But anyway, thank you, Brother Ray. Oh, yeah, I got to say it. I'm going to say it.
You said
I'm going to say
it. It's game over for the people of Philly. It's game over.
I'm done. All right, my buddy. Get that.
All right,
listen, let's go. Thank you, peace. Let's go to caller at 1600. Your mic is open.
Peace and blessings, Empress and Sister Keisha. How are you this evening?
Sister Sheila, I'm good.
Peace and blessings, sis.
Great. So, Sister Keisha, I'm so intrigued by this amazing conversation that you had with this young man. And so many categories of information come to mind. One, the first is the contradictions. I thought it was very clear that while you were on an intelligence gathering mission, he too was on an intelligence gathering mission. And I'm sure you didn't lose sight of that one bit. But what it brings to mind to you is this powerful intersection between federal, state, and the non-governmental agencies, if you will, that operate to support what we misguidedly refer to as white supremacy. And I think one of the first contradictions that he pointed out is how much respect that the white community had for Malcolm X. Really? I mean, you respect Malcolm X at the same time, do everything in your power to sabotage, misalign, and character assassinate him, and then fully assassinate him. I think that's one of the most absurd observations he could have respected to you. But as you are already aware, one of the important things in espionage is to offer your deceit first, right? To draw you in and make you feel comfortable, which is what you were also doing so brilliantly with him. The other thing that comes to mind is the sense of exceptionalism. When he tapped the police officer on the arm, another arm of the state and technically federal government, if you will, because so much of what they do at the state level is winked at by the federal government by their inaction or their proposed investigations that lead to nothing but the conclusion we had already drawn that asked us to invoke the federal investigation anyway, where people are saying, hey, there's a pattern of racism, only for them to come back and say, we observed a pattern of racism, right? but what you did differently with your exceptionalism is that you turned around and brought the information and the data or the intelligence back to your community to help inform them, which is good because it also brings to mind this issue of so-called human trafficking, because look how intricate that interplay happened, where you had the cab drivers, you had a seemingly innocent bystander, a public figure who was obviously more than a public figure. He was probably an undercover agent who operated through both his operations as a blue, blue by day, white by night, if you will, and also at the federal level, right? And so, you know, you have these innocent, seemingly ignorant black folk walking around thinking they're just there for some entertainment, and they just go missing, and we never even hear about them, right? And so it's interconnected with this international scheme of human trafficking and organ trafficking, and then just the joy that comes from deriving the death of an innocent black person. And then he talked about, you don't fight for yourselves. Excuse me? Have you heard of the Black Panthers? The Klan was one of the key components. The Black Panthers had no federal government behind them. They were operating completely independent of all governmental agencies, and that not only frightened them, but infuriated them to crush them. I mean, so I don't know what kind of fool he thought he was talking to, but clearly he wasn't aware of the family that Empress Chi has at her disposal, right? And so I thought the other contradiction was that they were waiting for us to fight for ourselves to free both the conservative Klan and the black people who they respect so deeply. Okay, yes. So let's break that down for a second. Have you heard of Black Wall Street? Okay, it hasn't been taught in history, but it was the federal government that disarmed the armed black soldiers who were going toe-to-toe. There were over 100 black militiamen. This is the part of history they don't tell us. There was over 100 black militiamen who were waiting in the woods, who were prepared and were taking on and were knocking out white folk by the hundreds. And the white folk called in the National Guard. The National Guard came in, and because of their federal authority, talk about hiding behind the federal government, they disarmed the black men under the premise that they were disarming the white people and that they were going to restore peace. And as soon as they took the black men, the black militia's guns, they came and released themselves and gave back the white people the power to come in, and then they even allowed them to drop bombs, okay? So no one hides behind the federal government more than white folk, particularly the white folk who engage in the business of black genocide. And to further prove that, the reason why the Civil War happened in the first place was because of a breach of contract between the states and the national or the federal government that once protected them at the federal level, even under the Constitution, to institute, support, finance, and ensure the enslavement of African people. And once they felt that contract had been breached or betrayed, that's when they broke off. Again, the federal government was the one that they were leaning into to support and ensure the security that undergirded enslavement. So what a hypocrite. And not only that, but once the Civil War was over and they started to lick each other's wounds and apologize for the slaughter of white men, because that's the one crime that they vowed to never happen again. White men will never kill white men for the protection of black life, was that they came again and reinstituted the federal government's power through the Missouri Compromise, which basically threw out all of the gains that the Reconstruction, 7 years of Reconstruction had garnered, the few years of black liberation that they experienced, where they saw a massive increase in black businesses, black communities, and black government officials. So what a hypocrite. What a lying, feces-filled vocal cord to make you try to convince you that you were his friend. I think what he was most impressed by was your lack of emotionalism and your lack of fear. But this black exceptionalism that probably saved you all's lives, whether you were aware or not, or at least contributed to it, right? Because they had probably already determined that y'all were on the dinner plate somewhere, as evidenced by you being followed. And he wasn't the only one following, because that's what he said. You're protected as long as you're with me. There was about 100 people watching y'all. They don't let anything fly in your city.
Thank you, Master.
So I just wanted to add that to it. And thanks for sharing that story. It both sent chills down my spine and anger down my, you know, core as well. I was like, what the audacity. So just in case the listening family didn't get it, I just wanted to reiterate those points.
All right.
Thank you. I'm glad you got it, sis.
All right, give thanks. Okay, we're going to go to caller. You are at 9462. 9462, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day. Oops. Hold on, 9462. I did have you. Something just happened. Uh-oh, what was it? Wait a minute. Let me try that again. 9462. Hold up. We're going to try that again. Okay, your mic is now open.
Good evening.
Greetings.
Mrs. Garvey, I'm so enjoying your spirit visiting us tonight in this broadcast and sharing that experience with the Klansmen, just like your husband did all those years ago. I am truly excited by this sharing. This is Elder Mama Condi. How you doing?
Right.
Hey, Mama Condi.
Just invoke that energy. I love it. You reminded me of the Wax and Wax Museum, where they have in, I think it's Maryland, Baltimore?
Yes,
in Baltimore.
You reminded me of an experience I had right before my mother passed. The family got together, and we went down to D.C. for Concoran and decided to go to this museum while we were in the area. And I'm in a wheelchair, and I'm blind. And so I pay full price, and we go in, my mom, several of my children, grandchildren, and some cousins. We go in, and I had one of the grandbabies read to me all of the plaques for all of the exhibits that were in there. And what I didn't know, like I said, I'm blind. I'm in my wheelchair. And one of my daughters came up to me and whispered in my ear, and she said, "Mama, you got a crowd of people around you. You got to hurry up. You're holding up the line." And one of the sisters in this group that my daughter said I was holding up, she spoke up. She said, oh, no, we're here on purpose. Your mama should be being paid for speaking about all of these exhibits. We're not here because we feel like we can't get past her. We're not trying to get past her. We want to hear what she got to say. And I was like, I just looked over my shoulder like, okay. So I kept going. And I kept telling them things that I had learned or studied or that I knew about the different people that were on display. When we got ready to walk out the other side of the building, there were about 50 people just following behind and moving up close so they could hear what was being said. You reminded me of that experience that I had. And I pray that you just continue to do exactly what you are karmically assigned to do when you were in the gates of Amenta preparing to come back this time. I am just so proud of you. I am just so proud of you. You get it. You hear the syncopations and the rhythms and the harmonics. You hear them even when others around you physically cannot hear it. But you hear it nonetheless. The melodies and the tunes that are being played and the messages that the ancestors are giving us. I'm just proud of you. Thank you for your energy. I thank you for your time.
And thank you, Mama Kylie.
I say, All right. Thank you, my sister. All right, family, we are getting ready to close this session out. We see that we do have now ready a representative from Rochelle McGee, Brother Rochelle McGee's coalition. So we're going to go back to Sister Keisha and get her closing comments. Again, thank everyone for their comments. We do have one more before we close out. Sister Keisha, caller, you are at, where did you go? Who the? Okay, I guess I lost you. All right. Okay, let's go back to Sister Keisha and get her closing comments. Oh, no, I see it. Hold on, one more. Okay, caller, you are at, nope, now they just clicked off. Okay, we were getting ready to come to you, caller, and you just clicked off. Okay, so let's go back to Sister Keisha and get her closing comments, and then we're going to hear our update on Brother Rochelle McGee. Sister Keisha, you got the mic.
Thank you, Tammy, for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to connect with you. Oh,
we're having a problem. We're having a problem hearing you, sis.
Okay, can you hear now?
That's a little better.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I want to thank y'all, New Day, for having me. It's important that we connect in these media spaces. Believe it or not, messages are getting out. As Brother Mike or Ray Ray was discussing what they saw down in D.C. with Io, the messages are getting out. What's happening with these African leaders right now is very, very important. I just hope they stay the course. We also have to remember that these Yoruba are not going to go away silently. But as long as we have each other, we'll be all right. As Mike says, it's very important that we stay in tune with what's happening down there or up there in the continent of Africa. We have to stay in contact. There are too many divisive mechanisms that are flooding these internet spaces to keep us all divided. But I'm proud to see that black men are standing up to these so-called Jews who are attacking their character, their well-being, their economic prowess. Whether you agree with their philosophies or not, I give kudos to people like Kanye, people like Kyrie Irving and others, Jaylen Brown, who are standing up. Finally, black women are pushing back against this LGBTQ agenda, especially the trans group. In the internet spaces, black women are finally pushing back against it. So we have to fight collectively. What they're doing on the continent should be followed by the Caribbean, should be followed by South America. And we here in the States have to continue to fight. In Brazil, they must continue to fight. Shout out to the people in Brazil, boy. They pushing back heavy. I don't know if y'all know what's going on over there. But we'll save that for another time. But we have to stay the course. We have to continue to push back. This is our time, and we have to take back what is rightfully ours, period.
I say, no doubt about it, no doubt about it. My apologies, sis, there was one more caller. It seems like they came back in. I don't want to ignore them. So, call
okay.
You're at 1750. 1750, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, A New Day.
Thank you. Living on the front line.
All right, now.
I want to say this to Sister Keisha. Why don't you get a bus tour to pay? You have people go down to Memphis under your direction because you know the field, the land, and everything, and where to eat, where to sleep, where to visit, and where to go. Okay, and then Brother Mike, nobody ever asked the question: why do these people, European people, feel like they have to invade Africa and take over Africa? What do they feel they own to that? And for you, Sister Philae Empress, you never mentioned how people can donate money to the station, or to you, or to the WMA,
WML,
Million Women March. Okay, I knew you never mentioned that part. I mean, I've been listening for a while, and you should mention that every now. You do a promo, right? You just do a promo with a commercial. Every three times for your show, you should play that promo so the listening artists can get the address and how to donate money to you or to the Million Women March. And that was something I wanted to say as a brethren, because you don't ask. You're too proud to ask. You know, you don't ask. And I don't mind you being proud, but you need to. You know me? So we need to make that happen for you. You know, because you definitely live it on the front line.
That.
I said, please give an address or a website or somewhere where people can call in or donate money today, now. So anyway. Living on the front line. We'll talk soon. Peace and love. Ashe, ashe. And give thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
Great show, too, by the way. Great show, by the
All
way.
Right.
As say. Usual. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, family. So
I can
I'm
say one
do...
thing for certain. I'm not good at planning these things. But I would definitely work with someone who can plan these bus trips or if you got to take a plane, because that's a long bus ride. But if you got to take a plane or whatever, I would definitely work with others who can do that. That's not my expertise. And so, I'm not going to jump in. As far as documenting the information, and like you said, telling them where they should go, what they should see, I can definitely do that.
All right. All right, family. So we'll put that call out. If anybody's interested in working with Sister Keisha to work on some kind of a trip or whatever, let's talk about it. We'll definitely look at it closer. All right. Thank you again, my brother. All right, Sister Keisha, again, let folks know one more time they can catch part two of this or more of this, rather, on your regular program, and let them know one more time when, where, and so forth.
Definitely. Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m., we are live on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitch, and Threads. We'll be adding Threads as well, which is a new media platform. So, again, I look forward to having you all with us. Join us in the conversation. Our chat stay open. We drop the link if you want to come on live, whatever you want to do. Engage.
All right. All right, family, you heard it right here, live and in living color on New Day. We had our sister Keisha Farsa with us, and hey, I mean, what can we say? Who could tell you that they had a conversation with a Ku Klux Klan member? And as Mama Condi mentioned earlier, so did I again. You know, we have read or heard that the Honorable Marcus Garvey and also the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the indications have told us they too met with some Klan members. So here we are, 21st century. Again, the legacy continues. And I know there's going to be more to come, needless to say. Again, Sister Keisha, thank you so much for sharing with us. And, you know, we're building this network, and it is wonderful. And so we are looking forward to advancing even further as we do this work that we now know we must do. Ain't nobody going to do it but us, y'all, at least not for right now. So, you know, if for those who know that, then come on, let's get it on. Thank you again, my sister.
Thank you, sis. And y'all stay in tune with New Day. Stay in tune with New Day. Stay in tune with New Day. Stay in tune with New Day.
Hey, Sister Key, you better watch that. You're starting to sound like Dr. Umar. As a sidebar,
now you're starting trouble. Now I gotta go to bed, man. See,
I knew you would catch it in a minute. That's a whole nother conversation, but not in that same context, by the way, y'all. Just for a point of clarity, it's just that he tends to say things several times. And so people have tend to note that. But anyway, it's a parity, that's all. All right, my sister. Much love.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, much love and
all
respect.
Right,
and you know I'll be there on Thursday, so put my little two cents
in.
Yes,
indeed. Okay.
All right. Have a good one.
All right,
family. We're going to move forward and close this session out for tonight. But before we do, of course, as we mentioned earlier, this is, of course, Black August. And so we're going to give you a little history about Black August and also tell you about the wonderful news. You know, on one hand, it is extremely wonderful. On another hand, it is really unfortunate. Unfortunate in the context of a black man, a brother, who has been incarcerated for 6 decades. I mean, you know, that's like, to think about that, wow, that's just un-freaking believable. And so, again, what we get ready to do, we were expecting one of our brothers to join us, but as it turns out, we were expecting Brother Harold Welton to join us. But instead, we have Brother Cameron, who is going to join us and share with us about Baba Rochelle McGee. Hey, Brother Cameron, how are you this evening?
Hello, I'm doing well. How are you? Can you hear me?
All right. Thank you for coming in. I know you initially we were going to have Brother Harold, so thank you again for, you know, stepping in and helping to bring forward this information because we definitely need to share it. It's on one hand, again, it's a wonderful thing to know that our elder is home, but, you know, needless to say, to think about the fact of what he had to endure for 6 freaking decades, I mean, that is just... you know. But anyway, I'm going to turn the mic over to you. Before we talk about Baba Rochelle McGee, could you just share with the family a little bit about Black August?
Yes, absolutely. Peace and greetings to everyone. And yes, our brother Harold would have been very happy to be on. Unfortunately, he had phone issues, and he sends his revolutionary greetings as soon as he let me know. I decided to step in, and Harold has been a trooper. For decades, you know, someone who's organized since the days of, you know, the 60s, the 70s, the anti-war movement, Black liberation movement. And, you know, I find myself to be someone who continues in the legacy of, you know, amazing organizers like himself. And, you know, just very thankful to be on the show as well. So You know, we talk about Black August every year for a very important reason. It is something that's done in honor of the centuries of struggle that bind us together as African peoples, but it is particularly born in the prison liberation movement, especially among Black prisoners. You know, and it starts in the late 70s, you know, several years after George Jackson is assassinated, and I'll get to who that is shortly, but it's a name that, of course, echoes through the decades. But, you know, it starts as a way to commemorate. You know, I've been often told, you know, it's not framed as celebration all the time. It's a commemoration, often very somber, but also, you know, looking forward to the future of, you know, the armed and sometimes, you know, very combative struggle against white supremacist violence, against capitalist violence. And that takes many different forms, you know, so we honor Harriet Tubman. It's said that the Underground Railroad is founded in August. We honor Nat Turner, you know, a rebellion that began in August. The Haitian Revolution kicking off in August as well. And then, of course, many, many different people who were born and unfortunately also left this mortal world in August. So it's just known as a time where we can come together. It's 6 months away from, you know, Black History Month, and they're very different in what they celebrate for many reasons. And I think the main part of that is that Black August focuses on the prison movement, you know, and as well as, like, the fight against chattel slavery, another form of its bondage. And it's really a spectrum, a continuum more, so going from the days of chattel slavery to now. So I think I can go ahead to give a little bit of that context of the early 70s that helps frame Black August. I think that could be helpful at this point. So there's many things to know. The best sources, of course, are, you know, the words of the political prisoners and the prisoners who, prisoners of war, as they're called, who lived through this era or who learned from the people who lived through this era. And one good place to start, of course, is Soledad Brother by George Jackson, Blood in My Eye by George Jackson. There's many other books as well. I won't list them now, but very, very important context to have. So when we talk about this brother, George Jackson, he's someone who was sentenced to 1 year to life in the 60s. And this is for, you know, an armed robbery where no more than like $70 was stolen, you know, allegedly. Okay. So this 1 year to life sentence, you know, a 1 year to life sentence really changes the mentality of a person in the sense that, you know, you're basically told you're never going to escape this place. You know, there's no way out, and especially when this is a clear crime of, you know, someone who's trying to make money to survive in the system. That's how we say capitalism is connected to so much of the prison system. In fact, the prison system really thrives off of people who are suffering, people who are, you know, not able to afford the things that they need. That's the main, you know, meal that this prison system eats. So, you know, George Jackson is someone who very much finds his mind when he's in prison. He starts to research. He starts to talk with brothers like W.L. Nolan. There's many others who could be listed, people who touch George Jackson, explain the world to him, because it's one thing to know you're in prison and know that it's a bad place. It's another thing to know why you're in prison, not just the so-called crime that you're accused of committing, but what kind of system leaves you in a hole, in a dungeon. And not only you, but then millions of your brothers, your sisters, your comrades. So he grows, he develops across the late 60s. He's writing many letters to prisoners, letters to people on the outside. These letters become Soledad Brother and George Jackson, Blood in My Eyes. So these are the types of things that, you know, as you read those books, you see his political development. You see how he deals with not seeing his family, with not seeing his loved ones. And many, many different things happen, but I think it's important to fast forward to a day. And I know that if Brother Harold goes on, he would go much more into many of the details, but I think for the sake of time, 1970, August 7, 1970. George's younger brother, Jonathan Jackson, who's been communicating with him through letters, you know, trying to stay in contact as well as he can, and as someone with a brother in the prison system, you know, I definitely understand the feeling of the longing of knowing that your blood is behind those types of enemy lines. So It comes to be enough for this brother, Jonathan Jackson, who was 17 years old at the time. We're talking August 7, 1970 at the Marin County Courthouse. Jonathan comes in, and he is fully armed, and he is ready to liberate George Jackson and two other brothers who are known as the Soledad brothers, John Clichet and Fleet of Drumgo. So in doing so, he, you know, the Soledad brothers are not there. His brother is not there. But who is there? We have Rochelle McGee, who is, of course, the political prisoner we're talking about. We have James McLean and William Christmas. So these are people who are involved in a different court case, but they're all in this courtroom at this time. Jonathan Jackson comes in armed. He's ready to, you know, liberate the people. And in essence, he hands weapons to these prisoners, and they escape the courtroom with hostages, including the judge of the case, the DA. They avoid taking, like, women and children. That is one of the decisions that they make on the ground that, you know, Rochelle played a key role in making sure that happened. So very unfortunately, very tragically, the prison guards outside decide to, you know, lay a siege, lay a massacre on these people, something, you know, that they're known to do. But it's very telling that their bullets even rip through the judge. They even, you know, leave him dead. But who else is killed? James McLean, William Christmas, and Jonathan Jackson. Rochelle McGee survives. He's injured. And he has a whole life story that spans the next, you know, 50-plus years until now. But Black August, you know, it's a snowball effect of, you know, chattel slavery, segregation, Jim Crow, you know, constant Klan terror. You know, I know that was the subject of the last panel as well. And another very important thing happens, which is just a couple of weeks later, we have, the next year, August 21st, 1971, we have the assassination of George Jackson, where he is also killed in prison. You know, he's accused of many, many different wild stories of why they killed him. But the truth is, George Jackson was someone who was a force to be reckoned with. He was incredibly well-built. He was a strong person who dedicated himself to personal training, you know, incredibly educated. You know, when he's killed, his cell is filled to the brim with books that he was reading, everything from Marx to Mao to Frantz Fanon to, you know, it's just a person trying to understand the entire world from the vantage point that he had inside of a prison.
Brother Cameron, hold that point for one moment. I just need to let folks know, if you're listening via your internet, you need to come over to the podcast, of course, by dialing 319-527-6189, because you're going to lose the internet stream very shortly, but you can continue with us on the podcast, okay? So I just wanted to give you that little sidebar. Please continue, my brother.
Yes. August 21st, very important day, because this George Jackson, who stood as a black superhero for many, he was a field marshal in the Black Panther Party from the prison, very much entrusted by the party to continue this type of work inside the prisons. But as I said, someone who dedicated himself to physical study, mental study, not restricting himself to studying the U.S., not restricting himself to studying Africa, but studying the entire world and how it all fit together. And I think that's a very, very important lesson, that even in the pits of hell, that's, you know, that's where he decides to take his mind. They decide to make that mind stop thinking. So they assassinate George Jackson August 21st, 1971. And we all know, you know, about 2 weeks later, something pops off on the other side of the country from California, and that's the Attica Prison Rebellion. And that's a prison rebellion, once again, for human rights, for human dignity, where people were standing up, where people were demanding that they are human beings, even at the cost of course, like, taking guards hostage. And how does the state respond under, you know, Governor Rockefeller at the time? Similar, massacre, brutality, violence, you know, this kind of barbaric attack on prisoners, willing to, these guards and police are willing to kill, you know, COs and people that are in there. It was just an absolute carnage. So this is the type of spirit. There's going to be many other types of suppression following the murder of George Jackson in the same way after Nat Turner's rebellion. We see that kind of echo effect. But I believe 1979 is known as the first year that Black August is commemorated. And, you know, it's because the movement is going through this type of time where a transformation is taking place, where the young are becoming older, of course. It's been 8 years since George Jackson is killed. And this is a time that it starts to be commemorated in the prison. And, you know, I know that there's many political prisoners and folks who have taught me who could tell you more about what it would have been like to be alive in that time or in the years following. But to my understanding, taking after the lessons of George Jackson, people like Kitari Golden, people like Jonathan Jackson, many different traditions start to pop up. So that could be reading and studying with your comrades. That could be dedicating yourself to physical study. It could be quitting cigarettes for that month, quitting, you know, anything with alcohol, or focusing yourself on the task at hand, which is the liberation of oppressed people, liberation of Black people. All of these different things, you know, it survives in many different forms. And today, you know, Black August is something that is more widely known, I believe. There's a struggle to keep it from being commercialized, from becoming, as it's called, like a second Black History Month, which it is not. They're not identical things, as far as my understanding goes. And, you know, Black August, Los Angeles was the formation that, you know, taught me a lot of this. And I worked with Brother Harold for quite a bit, learning these stories, hearing these stories. He would tell them better, as I said, but that's, you know, how Black August has come forward. And I know there are events that Black August LA and other cities are holding as well. So I encourage people to do their research, you know, look it up, and definitely check out the books and a lot of the content that's out there.
Ashe. All right. Thank you, my brother. So, of course, again, going, you know, bring us up to date with, of course, what's going on with Bobby Rochelle McGee. He is home. And so, talk a little bit about that and, of course, how people can now support, because this has got to be a tremendous trend. And so, support him coming. Are you there?
Hello? Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yes, okay.
I heard that. Hopefully you can still hear me. Yes.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, the quick speed run, which is very sad to have to do it, but this man has just lived such a long and, I believe, full life. You know, he's someone who hasn't wasted a day. He has been in some type of prison since the mid-1950s. You know, estimated around 1955. So can someone, I don't know if there's anyone on earth who can imagine everything from, what are different things that happened? A JFK being assassinated, Malcolm X being assassinated, Martin Luther King being assassinated, you know, the rise of the Panthers, the attack on the Panthers, everything in the 90s, 9/11, this, everything being viewed from the vantage point of being a Black man in prison. That is, it's a monumental amount of time. It's more than double the amount of time I've been alive. So there are many comrades who have lived completely different lives, who were maybe organizing before Rochelle was arrested for the 1970 Marin County Courthouse Rebellion. But long story short, he's first arrested in Louisiana. His charge was aggravated attempted rape, dealing with a white woman. The details of that are, of course, never as clear as they are presented by the courts, but we know that this is the same year, roughly, as Emmett Till is first, you know, at the time that he is, you know, murdered in just such a barbaric way around a complete lie. So he's sentenced to 8 years in Angola prison. So he gets out in the early 60s. He's arrested just a few months later, in 1962. He gets his, you know, sentence in 1963. What is that sentence? 7 years to life over what is called a kidnap to rob over a $10 marijuana deal. You know, the other person claiming that he had basically moved the car that they were both in and the key wasn't in the ignition. So, like, this counts as kidnapping. A lot of fluff added to the story. So 7 years to life, kidnapping. We looked it up. The average, the maximum or the average, you know, time spent incarcerated for even murder is about 40 years in California. That was what we found. So this brother, kidnapping charge, 7 years to life. This is the type of things that infuriates him. And across the 60s, he's watching the movements that are happening. He's studying Africa. He's studying the liberation movements taking place at the same time that, you know, were touched upon even in the earlier conversation. And he takes on the name Sinke, which is a very important name. Of course, anyone who's so familiar with La Amistad, you know, the ship that was taken over by the Africans who were being transported. And then, you know, they're ultimately able to win their freedom through militant struggle and through winning at the Supreme Court. So he takes on this name because he feels like he was robbed of his future. He feels like he was, you know, someone who's denied freedom. And then he thinks of, you know, more or less 1970 in that courthouse rebellion as a slave rebellion, as very similar to what happened with Brother Sinke of old. So, of course, the state wants to put the full weight of that rebellion on the survivor, on Rochelle McGee. They basically are like, okay, now you're never getting out. They cannot charge him over a murder charge because he was not responsible for any of the murders.
Wow.
But they do get him on aggravated kidnapping. He spends the next 53 years since that, since 1970, in different prisons across California. Of course, the Free Angela Davis campaign is connected to this because, you know, she was accused of providing the weapons for Jonathan Jackson who came in. Of course, then they go on a hunt for her. You know, she's freed through an international solidarity campaign, and Rochelle stayed. He stayed in prison, but he continued to do work, jailhouse lawyer work, supporting other prisoners, learning about the world. And I don't want to just skip 50 years, but I know that we got to get to the present. So, you know, and this Coalition to Free Rochelle McGee was founded in 2019 by many, you know, Panther veterans, by, you know, prison organizers, by, you know, young socialist organizers, such as myself. And these are the types of things that helped to build a new coalition that ended up with over 40 different endorsing organizations, an amazing website, freerochellemcgee.org, social media. And I just want to say one thing. It's an honor to see that he has been released. You know, as much as we all feel, you know, that he should have been out sooner, we know he should have been out sooner. He knows he should have been out sooner. I know that he worked for the people while he was in there. And he was doing, to an extent, what he wanted to do with his life while he was in there. And he made the most out of it. So having him, you know, return to the outside, he hadn't been outside since 15 or 16 years old, except if you count that moment that he was out with Jonathan Jackson. So I just want to, you know, make that point clear. This brother has gone through a lot. You know, I say that with both him and Brother Matulu Shakur, rest his soul, that under normal conditions, the fact that they have lived so long means they could have, under normal conditions, lived 200 years, 300 years, who knows? But these are our elders. These are our political prisoners. We have to support them. What someone can do, if you would like to give a type of contribution, is go to www.freerochellemcgee.org. Rochelle is spelled with two L's. That's R-U-C-H-E-L-L-M-A-G-E-E. So if you go to freerochellemcgee.org, you'll see a button at the top that says donate. We're currently at, you know, around 84% of our goal, which is currently $50,000 to support him. You know, that's it's the least that we can do for someone who is sacrificing so much, even at the risk of his own life, who has continued to do so over the next few decades. And altogether, we cannot forget our political prisoners. That's what Black August is all about. So please consider donating. Please consider helping with this reentry fund as he surmounts his medical challenges, as he improves on the outside. He needs that support.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Brother Cameron. So, family, listen, you know, continue doing this entire month, bringing this information to you, we can support our political prisoners and those who have been released. And I want to remind you that tomorrow there is a celebration of life for Dr. Matola Shakur. And again, you know, we want to make sure that those who have come home, that we continue to support them. Of course, we're talking about Brother Tegu and Jalil Montague, and, you know, there are others, Sundiata Akoli. These are brothers who recently, you know, have come home. So we have to stay abreast of them as well and continue to fight for the ones who are still there, Iman Jamil Alameen and others. So we've got to do better, family. That's just the bottom line. Again, these are people who definitely stood up for us and continue to do so. Brother Cameron started tonight's program off with Mumia Abu-Jamal, a few of his recent commentaries, and he talks, of course, about Dr. Matola Shakur in one of them. And so, again, you know, we are obligated to make certain that we continue to bring this information forward. So, Brother Cameron, please share once again how folks can donate and stay abreast of what's going on with Brother Rochelle.
Yes, I want to thank everyone who has supported through letters, through writing to the governor, through writing to Rochelle. I even want to thank you, you know, for your participation when we needed your support and when you helped with the virtual program that we had.
Yeah.
But work to, yes, yes, amazing day. Folks could even see that on YouTube if you look up Coalition to Free Rochelle McGee. We had something mm-hmm. for his birthday in 2022. And you can see amazing speakers, including the host here. So I just want to say for anyone who wants to support, go to freerochellemcgee.org. That's RUCHELLMAGEE.org. And at the top, you'll see donate to support Rochelle's reentry. So if you click that, you can go and give a donation. When you're done with the donation, you can go back to the website, read more about Rochelle's life, go to the YouTube, watch some old programming, and, you know, tell your friends. Please tell people to donate, your friends, your comrades, your loved ones, freerochellemcgee.org.
I say. And again, family, to remind you of the celebration of life for Dr. Matola Shakur, that's going to take place at 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you can just go to stillman-edu-zoom.us, and you should be able to get everything else that you need there. Or you can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, and then we can send you the link. But again, you can go to stillman-edu-zoom.us, and you'll see there Dr. Matola Shakur, Celebration of Life, and it'll give you the link that way as well. After the presentation or the tribute, the film showing of Death is Dope, Dope is Death, rather, will be available also. So, again, that starts tomorrow at 10 a.m. No, sorry, 11 a.m., 11 a.m., and that's Eastern time, by the way. All right, so listen, family, we're going to close this session out. We certainly appreciate all of you. And we're going to go back to Brother Cameron and get his closing comments. But remember, again, we've got to do better. We've got to do more. Many are doing wonderful things, as our brother just mentioned. You know, people have supported over the years continuously. And big ups to Sister Virginia. I haven't talked with her in a while. I understand that she's been dealing with some kind of health issues or something. But big ups to her, because she was our initial contact, and, you know, I know that she's been doing this incredible work for several years as well. So I want to thank her for, you know, continuing to do what she did. And that's how we got connected, by the way. So, again, big ups to Sister Virginia Harris. So back to Brother Cameron. So give us your closing comments for tonight, and then we're going to close this chapter out of New Day.
That's right. Thank you once again. And, yes, big ups to Sister Virginia, to Harold Wilson, who wanted to make it tonight but can't, to my brother G2 Siddiqui, who has done amazing work with this coalition as well. Just amazing folks who have helped to lead this coalition, lead it in the right direction and make sure that, you know, things are going forward. So ever forward, these are trying times. Just to speak briefly, because I know we went international, that, you know, we live in a world that is drastically changing, that is quickly changing, and we need social movements. We need people's movements to help make sure that the change is going the right direction, not the wrong direction. So we know that the United States, it has an unending war drive. You know, it has to have wars with someone, somewhere. In fact, as many wars as it can possibly have, the better. So we see it driving us toward war with China, drawing us toward war with Russia, drawing us toward war with Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, any country that doesn't want to be within its system, no matter what the government style is, whether we agree with that system or not, standing up against this beast is incredibly, incredibly important. And that goes all the way back to this, you know, the level of the local, the level of the national, in the sense that every warplane, every, you know, battleship, every aircraft carrier, we can see those as billions of dollars that could be going towards solving the social needs of the people, going toward, you know, renovating the housing, supporting people through that transition. It could go toward, you know, healthcare and education for all of our people. You know, and there's just so much that needs to be done. And the devastation that's caused on the other side is nothing to play with. But, you know, as much as it creates, you know, this system, it fills the cemeteries here in the United States. It fills them across the world. And we need people who are, you know, dedicated, who are moving this work forward, because otherwise there are people who are genuinely willing to lead the planet to ruin. And I believe that our struggle for our political prisoners who are fighting for these same values of liberation, fighting against war, fighting against racism, against incarceration, you know, we are continuing that legacy because they never leave us so long as we keep them in our minds, keep them in our hearts, keep them in our mouths. So, you know, we just want to continue to say these names, continue to never let our political prisoners be forgotten, and hope that everyone finds a way to commemorate Black August individually, collectively, and may we move forward toward a liberated future.
All right. Indeed, indeed. And family, I just want to remind everyone, we had some activities that we were going to be doing tomorrow for MWM. We are rescheduling those activities until next Sunday. So those who were going to meet us over at the building that we're taking, we were supposed to do that at 3. We're going to reschedule that for next week, and we don't want to rush back over there after Dr. Matulu's program for tomorrow. So we're rescheduling that for next week at 3 o'clock next Sunday. And then also for tomorrow morning, we had a session with our sisters on Zoom. We are rescheduling all of our activities that we have for tomorrow is rescheduled for next week. And lastly, I invite everyone to join us. Our brother Cameron mentioned something very important, and that is the idea of and the struggle dealing with this whole thing of captivity, being in captivity, being enslaved. Well, on August 23rd, literally International Day of Remembrance, the United Nations declared August 23rd as the International Day for the remembrance of the slave trade and that International Day. And so we will be doing our commemoration. Okay, so we'll be announcing again next week. But hold that date, August 23rd. It's on a Wednesday. We will be doing a whole session that will be International Day for Remembrance of the Slavery and its Abolishment. And this will be the 4th to the 13th Amendment, which is what we know. And, of course, what's going on after the reform, which for many of us, we're saying that this is a reform. But this whole thing got to be re-scrapped. And that puts it in mind. Next week,
Nation's Day. And I know a lot of people say, oh, you're not a nation. Listen, everything is applicable. Everything. And so, you know, it might not mean anything right now, or it might not be a lot of momentum right now, but it all leads to other types of capabilities. So we'll get more into that later. But Mirna, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us and to share this information. And I'm so looking forward to, you know, the future, to the continual fight and victories, by the way, and dealing with the system and what it has done, and surely will continue to do it for the future. So again, thank you for sharing with us and for being with us this evening. Not hearing you, so hopefully you did hear what I just said. But all right, family, listen, we are going to now close out. And, uh-oh, looks like we have one more caller before we do. And, caller, you are at 2273. 2273, we're going to open up your mic real quick before we turn around. I'm sorry, I just saw you. And, again, your mic is open. And welcome to the segment, The New Day.
Empress C.
Hey, yes, Brother Adrian, how are you?
I'm better than great. I'm at 2274, but real quickly, because I see that you're closing out.
Okay.
I don't know much about this particular case about Rochelle McGee, but I'm going to do research on it. When he talked about Louisiana prisons, Angola was used to replace slavery after slavery wasn't legal. They used the prison system, and one of them being Angola. But I wanted to mention that Busy Bone from the rap group Bone Thugs and Harmony said that he was at a meeting where prison officials met with music executives, because when hip-hop couldn't be stopped, they wanted to control it. So they used the segment of gangster rap to commercialize and glorify prison life to herd black men in particular as cattle into the prison system. So let us get involved with our inmates to teach them how to read and write. All of those, if you're in prison, do like Malcolm X did and Nelson Mandela and Khaled and several other of our great leaders who started out in prison. Go to the prison library, read the dictionary, do like some of our brothers who are doing TED Talks about the stock market and understanding financial literacy. So let us get involved and organize with one another. Like the Fred Hampton singers in the years of past, those things still work. Use old school principles and work with modern technology, and I think we'll be able to elevate as a people. And Empress C, you know, I'm still in support of the Million Woman March. So, you know, you, Sister Keisha, Big Mike, you know, you all keep organizing. I'll continue to do the same in my local area. And, you know, let's go to the top together.
All right, my brother. Listen, check your text, because I sent you a text, if not today, it was yesterday. I need to reconnect with the assemblywoman, because I wrote down her information on a piece. That's why I hate writing stuff down on a piece of paper. I tend to misplace it.
Yeah, Regina Barrow.
Yes, I need to get that information again, because I'm definitely coming that way, so I want to coordinate with her. So when you get a chance, just give me a call or just text it to me, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, all right, will do.
All right, my brother. All right, family, listen, we are going to close this session out. Remember, we have a lot that's getting ready to manifest with the We Charge Genocide 21 campaign. And, of course, as Brother Andrew just mentioned, the first Million Woman March, World March, is coming. And, again, this is much more than a march. So if you think that's all it is, you got another thing coming, I can assure you. But at any rate, we'll tell you more about that next week. For this week, we're going to close out here in the background. We got some drums that's going to close us out, because we know the power of the drums. Y'all get ready. The Shekmet Society is coming.
along with some other things. We're putting some things in place to make certain that we're able to move forward. One of those things for now is to make certain that we put some protection around ourselves. And so we'll talk more about that next week. Oh, yeah. We're talking about being secured all across the board, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Until next time, the multitude of Shenda. Together, we shall win.